Alex, of course, we forgot, I guess, to talk about the very interesting aspect of the solar cross, the M-class that we had now here just a few days ago, I think it was. We had a build-up, as we mentioned, and when we were on the topic of the recent X-class, we neglected to mention that the standing waves in the solar corona. You had an article very recently now put up about this from July 30th. We had a 9.3 M-class solar flare. And the, some interesting aspects that you pointed out there in terms of lens flare as opposed to something else that we can visibly see when we're looking at that, those images. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it really fascinated me to get a hold of those NASA images from the Space Dynamics Solar Dynamics Observatory. And it was really plain to see at this point with the great magnification that they have on those cameras to discern between what's a lens flare exactly during the eruption event and what in those same frames are extending in eight directions from the center of that event. So, you know, with lower resolution, that certainly would have looked like a lens flare. But now we're looking in higher resolution, and this is unmistakable evidence that I'm presenting for the standing wave theory, because we can see, again, just like we had plasmas in Fort Worth, Texas, arcing from one station to another power station, here on the sun, during the solar flare activity, we have rows of standing waves that show plasma arcing through them. And it looks just like the symbols on the Hopi artifacts, on all these artifacts I'm presenting. And as well, you can read a story on the site that's from a couple weeks ago, or no, this week maybe. Gavrins, France, is a small island that has in Brittany, that has an amazing passage chamber temple there that has standing wave depictions on giant stones, that standing stones that line the passage. So it's very much like Newgrange, which is much more famous, and every solstice people go there to watch the event where the light shoots down the shaft and illuminates standing waves in the dust patterns in the chamber if baritone chanting is done at that time, which it certainly was. You know, that visible effect is shown on the stones at Gavrinus Cairn in France as well. So there's a lot of stories popping here, and the solar flares, I think, is one of the most deeply moving things for me to see, because those were the first images when I saw detailed images of the surface of the sun that kind of woke me up of realizing that I've been seeing those images for years in my mind. And that now all of a sudden I was able to like tangibly bring it into our reality and say, this is what I'm seeing. And that's a lot of what my research has involved, is tying together things that I see in the world around me and then going deep inside and pulling out some kind of information, whether it's from the Akashic field or from past lives or future lives or, you know, all of the above, tying that together to try to explain these experiences that we're all having now that are so amazing and so unusual in our previous experience up to date. So people, one of the things, as we talk about Fukushima and radiation as well, one of the people who I think has really relevant information is Anastasia in Russia, who is the Siberian woman with a Vedic heritage of an amazing tradition that I think we should segue and jump into to talk about in reference to, you know, now we are dealing with a global problem and it's not just a Northern Hemisphere problem. It's a global problem where radiation is spreading, and it's spreading more and more rapidly.
Absolutely. One more thing, Alex, so on that solar article, because you linked up this, the video of that incredible, the massive explosion and the consequent plasma that blew out from the sun from June 7th this year. I've never seen anything like that. I watched quite a bit of footage and images, photos, what have you, from many of the solar, you know, observatories around the world. And this was an incredible thing where you could see the plasma or whatever it actually is falling back to the sun. And I'm just wondering, what if something like that was Earth directed, a direct hit, if you will, towards the Earth? I mean, obviously, just because it's massive amounts of plasma necessarily doesn't mean that it's a huge discharge of radiation. It just kind of goes along with it and suggests that. But when you look at that, do you think that there heralds things to come, potentially, what we saw there? Because I've never seen anything like that before.
Yes, that I think all solar scientists are now turning their heads and saying, okay, this next solar maximum, like the Mayans are saying, is going to be something massive, because we're not even close to solar maximum yet, as far as, you know, we have several months to go, and yet we had this event which far exceeds anything that's happened at any solar maximum or at any other time in the history of the observation of the sun. So, well, let's say, the history, the known, agreed upon history, although certainly there are a lot of observations which have been thrown out. So I would say an interesting factor, and part of which we spoke about in our previous interview, involves the galactic plane crossing and a period of darkness that I believe the Mayans speak of, that we will not see the sun. And so I believe that at the crescendo of this event will be an explosion on the sun, in which we will certainly have crazy solar flares. But before that happens, and maybe this is referred to in the saying, it's darkest before the light, that there will be an extinguishing of the solar corona surrounding the sun, and that period may last from 1 to 3 days, according on different sources. But really, this period is going to be so fascinating to reveal not only patterns on the sun, like sunspots, and imagine the whole sun covered in sunspots, what that might look like. That's something that on my website, people will already have seen a clue to what that could appear like, because I have presented so many spherical images with geometric sets of circles inlaid on them. But it's going to be amazing for solar observation, and we're going to learn a very, very special lesson, I think, in observing what's going on in the near future.
Let's see what happens there. Okay, let's go back then in terms of the situation in Japan, Fukushima. As you earlier mentioned, Alex, you believe that this is an event caused by earthquake-causing technology, if you will. Then I didn't at first. I've been looking at more and more of the data, and as it's been released, I guess in terms of the HARP, the monitoring of what was happening at the time of this incredible earthquake. And then the consequent meltdown of the plants in the Daiichi Fukushima plant. Why do you have a theory about why they're doing this? Why do they want to cause radiation to leak out on the planet? Because this must be the intent, if is it not?
Yeah, I would say that everyone's being primed to look for nuclear war being, you know, dropping major mushroom clouds all over the place. And what we're seeing is the beginning of world war, certainly with all of the Middle Eastern activity, with all of these countries being invaded by the United States, the latest being Libya, showing Obama to be nothing different than a warmonger like all the presidents before him. This whole pattern we're seeing is their response to knowing these changes are coming. Meaning, you know, tell a psychopath that school's out, everyone's on at lunch, and, you know, he's got no lunch, where's he going to be? Trying to con someone somewhere or intimidate someone. That's what psychopaths do. So, you know, that's just their animalistic response. And the fact is, they do have technologies that can give orders to people who know how they work to get them to do what they would like them to do. But that's not going to last for very much longer, because all of this equipment is completely unnatural and is not going to make it through the changes we're talking about. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a petty warmonger who's not going to be able to play with his toys anymore. And that's going to be a sad thing for them and a really, really happy thing for the world. So many people focus on it, and it's like, if you can accept the fact that it really happens, that this is what's involved, the next step is moving beyond that and saying, what is this demand of us if we're aware of this? How does our action need to change to accommodate this knowledge? And for me, there's one answer to all of life's problems, and that is the Vedic tradition, our heritage that we have globally. And learning about that history and that tradition, for me, has been like free a way of freeing my mind from all of the propaganda that tells us that we don't know anything, which is very true. We know very few things, but we do have a tradition we can draw on that explains those things and allows us to, for example, one of the most important things it allows us to do is to plant seeds in the ground that are communicating with us through our DNA. And that process itself, I believe, could be one of the most important things that is being forced onto human consciousness by the necessity driven by radiation through the atmosphere.
I find it interesting.
It's a very fascinating time.
It is, and I find it interesting, Alex, that Japan, for whatever reason, has been plagued now by multiple nuclear attacks. Then, if we summarize, if you will, what has happened, both on the 6th and 9th of August, two bombs were dropped exactly 60 years ago. Timing, is that important? What's going on there? But it's an interesting factor, and I think that I can't figure out why Japan has been hit so hard by this, of course, but now we understand that it's not only in Japan, this is going over to the United States, this is going over to Europe, and this is basically, we might have this coming down over whatever area the winds and the jet streams choose to carry the radiation with it. Do you feel more safe down in the southern hemisphere? There is a little, obviously, bridge there, if you will, of a warm air at the equator that kind of divides this. And as far as I know, there is no real mixing going on there in the weather patterns or in the jet streams. Right, Alex?
Well, there is, although it's very little. And so my feeling is that certainly we're getting it here. And I do have the feeling in my meditations when I've tried to feel for it and remote view the conditions in the atmosphere and what's going on right here, I do perceive it. My ability is not that great that I can be any more specific than that. But my feeling is that because this is a continual and growing release from Fukushima, that it is a good reason to be in this hemisphere. And especially if you look at the global distribution of nuclear power, it is virtually all in the northern hemisphere. So being in the southern hemisphere, I believe there are only three, and there are probably two more in construction, I think. But all of these reactors will fail, all of them necessarily during these events, because they are trying to cool these things, and I'm very sure that the sun, the solar activity as I'm tracking, is going to heat them up at some point beyond their ability to use electrical machines to cool them. So certainly I've moved here, and I created a plan for myself to move here years ago based on that knowledge. I don't want to scare people into running away, because certainly it's coming here as well. But my point is that the changes that are occurring in the atmosphere in 2012 will be benefiting our ability to deal with this radiation, as well as the changes in the frequency of human consciousness that will allow us to have new abilities. And one of those new abilities I really am interested to talk about is maybe one that no one's ever heard about. It's called psychokinetic radiation abatement. And what that is basically a form of telekinesis, or influencing the world with your mind, to lower or abate the radiation levels that are present in the atmosphere or around a person or in your body. And I'd like to read a quote from my book, Veil of Invisibility, where Dr. Sue Arrigo, former doctor who's now not practicing, she is a CIA psychic, leading psychic, who has given us a small history of the radiation abatement by psychokinetic means that has been practiced by the U.S. government. And it may give us a clue as to how these guys may be thinking that radiation may not affect them as mm-hmm. much as everyone else. Mm-hmm. Because that's obviously a big question when you ask, why would they be doing this on purpose? So concerning military use of psychokinesis, here's Arrigo's description of a Zen monk's spiritual talents in the abatement of that radiation. It was not until 1938 in Nazi Germany that the first experiments showed that the mind could change radioactivity of a substance per se. That experiment was done to see if it was possible to change the glow of a radium-painted dials to cause them to black out during air raid drills.
That experiment was considered a success by the standards of the day, as the radium was noticeably fainter afterwards. It was not thus until after the dropping of the A-bombs on Japan that the question became a pressing one as to whether the mind could cause radiation abatement. A curious note in the history of this topic comes from a Zen monk who cared for the sick and washed for them. However, when the U.S. Army studied the radiation levels, they found them less in the monastery and concluded that the wind patterns had prevented as high an exposure there. That interpretation could have been true except for one notable anomaly. In the vicinity of the monastery, behind its walls, the radiation levels were higher than expected. Still, this was explained away as due to the washing of the monastery by the monks with the deposit of the dirt outside the monastery. It would not be until a few years later until that U.S. Army would test the Zen monk in question on his ability to directly abate radiation. When they did test him, they found that he was able to reduce radiation by about 82%. This reduction was long-lasting, and later he was asked to go to Bikini Atoll to help treat some of the survivors in the radiation experiments there. But because he affected the radiation levels around him in general and often in unpredictable ways, the U.S. Army, which wanted to study the effects of the radiation levels on human health, ended up sending him back to Japan. That monk's name was Tomo Ayuhaui, and many Zen people considered him a local saint. He was renowned in his area for his kindness and his healing abilities, and so the Army really did not think that his ability to lower radiation levels would be reproducible. Thus, there was little attempt at that time to do further experiments along these lines with an eye to finding or developing others who could do the same. I know about this early history on the topic because the CIA asked me to do research the area and write up my findings, which I did in the mid-1980s.
Mind over matter. Wow, that's an very, very interesting story. And in some regards, I do believe that they have carried on some of this kind of research. It's interesting to me that the CIA and the Army, the military have been, in many regards, those who have gone quite a bit into more esoteric and, if you will, almost occult subject matters as well. I'm thinking about the first Earth Battalion and ideas like this. This has been kind of made into a joke, if you will, by this movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and obviously the book before that. But it still reveals something, Alex. It still reveals the curiosity from their point of view, from their part of and their willingness, if you will, of studying this. And the question is if this was dropped or not, as suggested by the quote here that you read. But they might have looked into this further. But this obviously is quite a lesson then. Mind over matter. Is this something you believe that basically everybody can teach themselves or learn how to do? Because if we think about it, it's things like this that's potentially going to be the only fix. If things get bad enough, if you will, it doesn't matter how much kelp or iodine you try to take, it won't do anything. You need something else. You need to transcend over that, right, Alex?
Exactly. And I think what we're talking about here is could be possibly two things. This could be the mind literally changing the radioactivity of the atoms in the substance itself, and that the radiation is lowered. Normally, atoms might decay in thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions or billions of years. And people are looking at radiation as being a problem because they see this being radioactive for that length of time. Well, not only do we have evidence from these sources that advanced psychokinetic means can change that radiation, but we also have sources from recent research in laboratories and universities around the U.S. where they are showing that microbes, bacteria, feed on these toxic metals, and when they process these radioactive metals, they lose their radioactivity. So a secondary factor could also be involved, that the mind can influence microbacteria or normal bacteria to digest these toxic metals into a form that is not toxic. Mm. And that's something certainly that came up as a big possibility, which was hidden and suppressed during the Gulf oil spill, Gulf of Mexico, which is obviously still ongoing. There are probably still tears in the bottom of the ocean that are releasing these pressurized liquid oils. But everyone was caught up with wondering how to clean this up. And there were companies in the U.S. that are stocking bacteriological cleanup materials that if they had dispersed these into the waters, there would be a significant
reduction in the toxicity.
Yeah.
So certainly for oil cleanups, this is one thing, and they're deploying them by hand or, you know, from boats, but they're growing these things. Well, there's another level where psychokinetically you can influence these microorganisms to do your bidding. And I think that is a teaching that is directly stemming, and an ability in human beings that's directly stemming from their communication with plants. And again, Anastasia in Russia has a solution for us there. And she really has driven it home by a remote viewing session that she was quoted on in one of the books, I believe the fifth book, where she described children from the future controlling, specifically from Russia, who grew up in these spaces of love where the communication between the trees was supporting the spirit living there. And obviously I mean spirit because it's the biorhythmic entity inside the body that's biorhythmically being enhanced and synchronized with by all the plants in those areas. So she explains that these children in Russia who grow up this way by these planting techniques, based on the ancient Vedic tradition that she provides, later in the future, they develop these psychokinetic powers where they are able to destroy missiles at a distance, first by exploding them, and then secondarily by having them eaten in milliseconds by, you know, hordes of microscopic organisms that do their bidding.
I wanted to ask you about the going back to the Gulf oil spill again, and then tying in this together with Fukushima and this very interesting aspect of the nuclear eating bacteria. This has been a speculation from people who have been researching underground bases for a long time as well. They speculated that some of these cavities in the underground was created basically with nuclear weapons, and then there were sent down bacteria into these cavities to basically clean up, if you will, left meaning no radiation is left within them, and you can begin to house them, if you will. But the BP, one of their spokesperson, on camera, I think by accident, kind of made a mistake because it was cut off pretty quick, mentioned that they had released synthetic microbes in the Gulf. And I'm just wondering if that's something that you heard, and if what that could be. If I'm wondering if they themselves might have been experimenting with some kind of bacteria that was going to eat the Gulf spill. I know that what you mentioned, of course, is more or less an established fact, and that they didn't use this as a solution is just beyond me, and just shows even more that they're actually now creating the problem. They're not interested in fixing this. But did you hear that aspect about the synthetic microbes in the Gulf, Alex?
I had not heard that slip up, but obviously that's what it is. And it probably happened from an industry person who was not insider enough to be aware of the fact that this was all purposefully done. And of course, you know, the fact that Halliburton, an obvious CIA front company, was involved in the explosion that happened that caused this quote unquote accident, you know, it's almost as blatant as having like during the Norway shootings, having the Norway explosion, the Oslo explosion, having, you know, these trial, what are they called? The mock exercises that they run during those times for an exact similar event.
Yeah.
So, it's like a calling card for insiders to know what's happening. But I think, you know, their ability to pull these strings is almost up. You know, the viability of the kind of warfare that they're subjecting humanity to right now is got about 500 days left. And I was interested to look up how many days until December 22nd, 2012. And our interview today is on the 9th. It'll be aired later, but today is actually marks the 500th day of, I believe, this sun that we experience. And the new sun will be something that is what I'm developing myself for right now. Certainly we need to think about radiation and developing our purity in our body, developing these things. And psychologically, we also have to look at what the craziness that's going on around us and to ground ourselves and integrate into the reality that's coming and learn and keep your eyes open and talk to one another. And I think that's going to be a key towards, you know, withstanding and surviving and enjoying these changes and the beautiful show that'll be happening in our skies.
It could be quite something. A lot of people are having a lot obviously on the line of this as well. What if, and I've asked other guests this too, Alex, what if it doesn't happen? What if for whatever reason it just maybe not misfires? Maybe there's a, I've speculated with other guests as well that there might be a delay in the implementation, or the fact that we might witness this later, and this could be months or years. But what if it just kind of continues as usual? You alluded to this earlier when you said that if we don't get a culmination, if you will, of the events and a clear-cut breaking point of this, it pretty much is going to carry on as a buildup of this energy. What then, Alex?
Well, certainly we see an earthquake crescendo happening. So people can say, well, maybe it'll be nothing more than that. And I could acknowledge that and say, well, based on, if you don't have access to very special information, that's a very logical conclusion. I can accept that too. But we are looking at least at a major earthquake crescendo going on right now. And even in that scenario, the viability of living in high-rise buildings in all these places is, dwindling every day. And really has never been viable because we didn't understand how our own bodies and consciousness works. The reality is that we have an energy field around us that goes hundreds of feet in each direction in a bubble, basically. And this bubble is described in ancient texts by many cultures. And I quote extensively in my books extraterrestrials who speak about this, as well as ancient information coming through Carlos Castaneda from the Yaqui elders. But this bubble of energy, if you imagine a full high-rise building, you can imagine this bubble is interpenetrated by thousands of other bubbles of thousands of other people in a city. And this effect is very detrimental to life in general, because the negative energy is what's predominantly running through these people's energy fields. And so you're at resonance with that, regardless of how good you are. Monks go to monasteries and to places to meditate to get their energy field their own and to get other people's energy bubbles out of this state of interpenetration that happens in most urban areas.
Yeah.
So I would say lifespans in general are reflected by that interaction, either resonance with other human beings at a low resonance or resonance with the earth at sacred sites at a much higher resonance with potentially other human beings there as well who choose that way of life. And in fact, the interpenetration of those energy fields benefit each other in that energy, good energy space. But it all, I believe, has to do with heartbeat synchronization. So when I say negative energy, I mean very low coherence in the heartbeat. Someone who likes to go watch Friday the 13th fear movies and then turns on Alex Jones and gets ranted at and then, has truck traffic outside their door and has people calling them all the time on their cell phone. These types of lifestyles are sucking out the energy that's in your energy bubble, in your field, because you're losing coherence. Your heart races, it slows down, it stops, people's diet does this to them too, because their heart is trying to overworked because their body may weigh 400 pounds or what have you. But the lifestyles that are leading people down this road is exactly opposite from what you could develop as a yogi in a energy vortex, for example, where you have a temple with stone. And often I talk about the piezoelectric transduction of crystals in metals or in stones of acoustic energy into electric energy, which fuels this spiritual metabolism in the human body that has been documented, and I quote in the last chapter of my first book, Phi, scientists who acknowledge that cellular function can be augmented directly by electrical current. So this new perspective, I guess I'll wrap up and try to get back to your initial question, which was whether or not if we only have an earthquake crescendo, what should humans be expecting in the changes? And I would say, regardless of these changes, getting the metals out of your mouth that are toxic, detoxifying in every way is key right now, especially because the radiation, which is a reality now, this is not a projection in the future, and it's continually releasing in greater and greater amounts.
Yeah.
So when I'm, living down here in South America, I realize that it's all coming down the conveyor belt and in the same levels that you would have in California. But the fact is, in California, they're continually exposed to higher levels, and it'll continually be the case until something changes at that site, which, to my knowledge, Fukushima is not getting better anytime soon.
Yeah. It's it feels to me too, Alex, I think you raise a really interesting point about the energy, the bubbles of the energy body, the astral body, pretty much the way that these interact with each other. So it's a kind of an entrainment of sorts happening as well. If there's a very low frequency around you from other people or from, you know, machinery, devices, what have you, it's a fight to basically just keep or to hold your energy field, and you can't keep that up all the time. Your astral body needs to rest at some point, and that's why it's important to disconnect from that. And I feel very, I guess, in that regard, sad for people who are stuck in a big city, especially if we think about the upcoming times that we might be facing. It's very worrying, Alex.
It is, and I've had many visions about this, and had a lot of obviously a whole significant portion of the drive that I have to produce my website is to help people in any way that I can with this information, to try to wake up those who are ready for it, because obviously it's a very small percentage of the population. But I feel like this whole energy that is dangerous if you live in this lifestyle that Western culture has created around you, which I might say is not the correct application of Tesla's technology, but the misapplication of his technologies. That world that was created by hijacking his technologies is so dangerous that really it is forcing people into another level of consciousness, that those who are not able to flee the cities and do perish in that chaos that will ensue, that those people will be able to reincarnate in, if they have that right frequency in their spiritual makeup, that they'll be reincarnating. And I know that's the case because of my personal experience. Many people might see that as a cop-out, but the fact is our learning cycle and all these changes here doesn't end when you die. And even when you die, you are in contact in spirit form watching what's happening. And even from that perspective, you will make certain cognitions and learn certain things in your spirit by watching the chaos that happens here. And that's what we're all here for ultimately.
Let's see if there's something else we can mention about Anastasia, the Siberian woman, the lady who was into the aspect of aiding and helping these children along, and if something more we can mention about that. I find it interesting, and just going back to that idea of mind over matter again, that although we might perceive it on the physical level as things being detrimental / too late or over, what have you, there's always things that they might come in an unknown variable, if I put it that way, into the picture. This might even be related to the fact that people might actually get ideas. It's been argued, Alex, in many by many other people, that it's when it's the worst possible times, that's when human beings come up, they're the most ingenious at those points, come up with new things, solutions, inventions occur in these points as well. Meaning the time that we're in for might not only be detrimental, it might actually be a key, if you will, to some regard, however silly that sounds, to the future of mankind, if you will, because we're forced now at one point to reassess some of the things that we've been doing in the past, and we need something to move forward. And I believe that humanity probably wouldn't do that if everything was happy and perfect, if you know what I mean. There's no incentive at that point to change the behavior or to change something. Would you agree with that, Alex?
Well, I think it's two quantum states. You know, when you look at our reality here on this planet right now, it's obviously not the learning cycle that we all experience from being here is a quantum shift away from being on a type of high resonance planet that we would all like to live on, and we're all developing, and I believe we will all achieve at some point in the future on this planet, through our direct hands in the soil and our planting, really is the solution I see. And when we do achieve that higher level, then we'll start to spread life and fill our planet with life. And then you rise at the point where you can start filling other planets with life. We start creating, beautiful vegetation on worlds that are now developing at lower levels, just like ours is now. So certainly there's a long, long way to go, and it's a huge dichotomy looking at those two quantum states. But the beauty of what we're experiencing right now is seeing the transition. And I find it fascinating to think about, you know, my intuition and a lot of my research shows that psychopathy in this world is useful to us as a tool and a learning lesson, like we're talking about,
sure,
because we cannot see auras. If we could see auras, there's no way you could get Obama up on a podium lying through his teeth like he does. So, you know, this scenario is going to be humorous when we have such a dichotomy in the level of people, people living on a higher resonance and interacting with people still operating on the lower resonance. It'll be absurd. It'll be like, you know, it'll be so one-sided, it's ridiculous. And, you know, right now we have it one-sided where people get abducted and there are government, you know, sponsored assassinations and government terrorism, as we see all over the world now. And the opposite will be true in the future, where the beings who are on the higher level will suddenly be educating those beings on the lower level from such a high vantage point that there will be no conflict, you know? It's, you know, I use this metaphor often, but I think it's very, very profoundly fitting, because if you imagine what's happening, putting psychopaths who are known and scientifically can be measured in 5 minutes with an easy test to have no moral sense, no feeling, no emotional reaction to the pain of others. If we imagine those people being put in positions of power to run whole countries in this world, what we're seeing is basically someone filling all the bus driver's seats with blind people. Hmm. And there are, you know, people who are not seeing have other senses and have all kinds of abilities that can help humanity, and bus driving is not one of them. So we have to look at psychopathy in those same similar basic terms and realize that, you know, blind drivers are being put in the driver's seat and they're heading towards the cliff, and we need to use science to stop this car and get those drivers in the passenger seat where they need, because there is a place for psychopaths in this world, and it's to teach us how not to create them, you know, because they're a product of their environment. I think the pyramids themselves will be creating acoustic conditions where the fetus in the womb will not be exposed to the dissonance which causes the genetic problems that give people deficiencies in their mental abilities and moral abilities. So
that's interesting. So you think it's only related to the environment? This is not a quality of the spirit or the soul, if you will, Alex?
Well, it's a learning environment that's created by low resonance at this time as our planet moves through its cycles. And I think that learning opportunity was seized upon by spirits who came into those bodies from a lower resonance standpoint spiritually, and that their learning cycle is intertwined with our learning cycle at this point. And I count myself among the non-psychopaths, simply... we're the majority, the vast majority, and we're here teaching the psychopaths is part of that. Being dominated by them is part of that cycle, and it's part of that cycle that's about to end, I believe. And that psychopaths are really a sign of the acoustic resonance on the planet, and if you understand it on that level, then the souls are here simply because they can learn the lessons in this environment that they need to learn. And, you know, since I've taken that perspective, I've been able to a lot more clearly deal with the news and what I see happening in the world that's so negative, because there's no fear attached to it when you understand how something like that works from a scientific level.
It's an interesting point to raise. And what do you think, let's speculate and, you know, that we come to this point when it becomes a known fact, more or less, that psychopaths are in existence in the world. They are primarily, attracted to power positions to further kind of just spread their disease, if you will, in one way. But what do you think will happen at that point? Education, imprisonment, studying, euthanasia? What will happen, do you think?
Well, I think this is going to naturally come about by the fact that the majority of humanity starts to see auras. You know, I mean, if we project nothing changing in the energy levels of our planet, then really I do see a complete doom for this planet, with the psychopaths committing suicide on a, you know, genocidal global level, because obviously they have a deep death wish themselves. And you know, we're at a point where there's a great quote from some of the extraterrestrial material that I quote in Lightwater, where a very advanced consciousness is explaining the situation, you know, or part of the situation to the contactee. And they explain to him that there's a certain juncture in time where nature steps in to assist the pupil. And of course, nature representing the creator's tools and means for the pupil to learn on this planet like we are. And I think that's really what we're going to be seeing in the atmospheric changes that are happening with the shift of the ages. And people would love for it to be gradual, and it's obviously not.
Yeah.
We can see very clearly here that there are, you know, changes that have been happening constantly for thousands of years, and in the last hundreds of years, you know, in the rise of industry, all these things are reflecting a great cosmic change that has to do with the acoustic oscillations running through our planet and our bodies. But, you know, from that perspective, you can alleviate fear in imagining what the environment will be like in the future. And for myself, I certainly am starting a type of environment here in Ecuador, in La Mana, where I hope to draw conscious people, because there are many properties nearby available, many, you know, openings here, many springs on all these land that have really high quality water. You know, I'm not starting a community per se, but I certainly want to be in an area where there's an energetic hotspot, where there are people playing with their own consciousness in a very constructive way. You know, planting, learning how to do these planting techniques, spreading that knowledge. It's not something I want to get done in the next year, but it's something that I think the universe is wanting us to do, and is creating all kinds of amazing circumstances for us to do. And, you know, all the changes that we see ultimately, I believe, fall into that category of wonderful serendipitous events that seem, you know, like a forest fire seems so horrible. And yet you have green sprouts coming up from it right after the fire, you know, is gone.
Right. That's right. It's a phoenix analogy in that sense. You have it's a necessary deconstructive period that we're going through in order to let some new growth come into it. I think many people would agree, nonetheless, that we could definitely use some energy here to help balance the scales a bit, because the ruthless of this world have gained and claimed, you know, way too much without the other people, if you will, standing up and saying no. I still see that's a part of it too. Not in terms of violence confrontation, but the fact that the responsibility also lies in people who are participatory in this, in the way that they're allowing it to happen. They're allowing the psychopath to take the room, if you will, to claim the space, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. And I have one other big piece I want to drop before we wrap up here, because there's, in my Lightwater book, I present several different cases of extraterrestrial contacts which have profound implications on these changes. And one of the biggest ones has to do with a process that each of the contactees goes through when they go up into the ships of these visiting beings. And I could quote from these from the book. I don't know if we have enough time to do that, so I'll just summarize.
No, you can go ahead, Alex.
Yeah? Okay. So I'll start with, let's see. Well, I guess let me frame that in terms of human technologies. I've been lucky enough to work with and speak with Troy Herdebees, who's the inventor of the Angel Light and the God Light plasma beam devices up in North Bay, Ontario, Canada. And his work in 2005 was published, and I have stories on that linked through my website. From May 12, 2005, there's one on the Time Cycle you can look up, where he's basically talking about cellular rejuvenation from his godlike device. And he's talking about having gotten cancer from his first machine and then detoxing in the second machine. An amazing story. Well, we have exactly the same type of phenomena happening in the beam, the plasma beam technologies on these extraterrestrial craft. And contactees are required to go through this process to decontaminate. And so I'll read here from Jurandir Olivera in his interview with Linda Moulton Howe in 2002, which I quote on page 138 of my book Lightwater. She asks, what occurred right after the transport into the plasma ship? This being was waiting, and how many others? Answer, there were more. He cannot tell exactly how many, but there were more behind him. He was the main one, this one waiting for him. He's like 6 foot 3 or 5 inches tall. Then he walked in towards a bubble that was higher than him, and he saw a bed inside this bubble and just supposed he had to go and lay down there. Inside the bubble, it was cold, like a car with air conditioning on. He just walked through it as if the blonde being was telling him, go in, lay down, and relax. That's what he felt. He goes through it, feels very cold, lays down on the bed, and then some sort of mist comes in, and the shorts he had on disappear, and in its place, some kind of other clothes materialize over his skin, like those worn by the blonde beings. All of them, including his own, emanated a light like silvery white light. Emanated a light like silvery white neon lights. This light stabilizes his chakras and is sterilizing him from any bacteria on this planet. So that's an amazing quote, which gives very specific details about plasma bubbles that are walked into for decontamination and it feels cold inside. Mm. And I have another quote which exactly corresponds to this experience given by Michel Desmarquet, a Frenchman living in Australia who wrote a book called The Thayuba Prophecy in 1996. And I quote that on page 154 of my book Lightwater. He explains, upon entering the giant ship, we were now gliding at ground level along a tunnel-shaped corridor that led to a small room, the walls of which were of a yellow so intense that I had to close my eyes. It is not a light. It is just the present color of the walls. There is no paint. There are only vibrations, Michel. You still believe that you are in your earthly universe when you are not. You are now in one of our super long-range spacecraft capable of traveling at several times the speed of light. We will be leaving soon if you will lie down on this bunk. There in the center of the room were two boxes, rather like coffins without lids. I stretched out in one of them and Thao in the other. I wanted to lift myself up but couldn't, being held down by an unknown and invisible force. The yellow color progressively disappeared from the walls to be replaced by a blue that was certainly no less intense. Thao explained the light intensity as a health precaution. We come from a planet that is bacteriologically different from Earth, which for us is a veritable culture medium. Thus, in order to contact you, I was obliged to take this basic precaution. You yourself are a danger to me, but you are no longer. When you entered this cabin, the color was too intense for you, and I gave you a helmet, which you are now wearing, which was specifically designed for you. During the very short time the cabin was yellow and then blue, 80% of the dangerous bacteria in you was destroyed. Then perhaps you felt a coolness in the air, similar to when an air conditioner is working. This was another form of disinfection by, let's call it radiation, although that is not the correct word. It cannot be translated into any Earth language. In this way, I have been disinfected 100%, but you still have enough bacteria to harm us considerably. I am going to give you these two pills, and in 3 hours you'll be able to consider yourself as pure as one of us. As she spoke, she took a little box from her bedside bunk, removed the pills and turned them out to me, held them out to me along with a test tube containing a liquid that is supposed to be water. I swallowed them both, lifted the base of my helmet to do so. I have given you a special drug in order to cleanse your body of all bacteria that is dangerous to us. I have also given you another drug that has caused your astral being to leave your body. This will last 3 hours in the time it will take you to purify. In this way, you will be able to visit our spacecraft without any danger of contamination to us and without wasting time.
So that's interesting, Alex, to me too, because that takes me back, you know, to the classic H.G. Wells stories, basically, that bacteria would kill the E.T., you know, the monster in his case. But maybe that's, you know, something more to that then, because we're not seeing the flying saucer land on the White House lawn, not necessarily because they wanted to do that, but I guess what I'm saying is that point of official contact, if you will, actually has to do with the fact that we're so vastly, we have such a different bacterial, you know, fauna, if you will, that it would be pretty much impossible for that to take place, unless there is something like this happening, a kind of a a purification from one or the other so that they can meet, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think, too, the conditions being created in these craft are HHO plasma exactly. And I've got, you know, the Troy Hurtubise godlight information to back that up. So what we're looking at here is a radiation decontamination technique, which obviously bacteria is what's being described to the contactees here. But I have another set of information coming from Dr. Raymond Bernard, who discusses radiation cleansing and the exact effect that these two contactees just discussed as well. It's from Search Magazine, which was published in 1960, and it's quoted in my book Lightwater on pages 16 to 17. And this is the exact science that is being discussed here is precisely corroborated by all the findings since then. This was in 1960.
Interesting. Okay. So it's been quite a while, and then so this information from Troy Hurtubise and the Godlight, that's something people can read more about in the your book Lightwater, correct?
Yes. And so I want to get to that quote. There's the Bernard information here. He says basically he's contacted an Atlantean in an underground tunnel that he's discovered. And he's gone down there and was given this dialogue during his decontamination process. He says, on the second visit to the Atlantean, he delivered a lecture on radioactivity and its danger. He said that radioactive dust in the air is causing surface dwellers to age very rapidly because it accumulated in the pores of the skin and stops skin respiration. He said the pores of the skin have a constant alternate contraction and expansion and serve to take in air and expel foreign matter. In an atmosphere of radioactive dust metals, their substances clog up the pores and interfere with their vital functions of respiration and excretion. This causes disease and early death. The Atlantean called me to come near a transparent screen to make an exchange of blood to make sure I will preserve the secret of the whereabouts of this tunnel so that I will not reveal it to any unworthy person. And then I won't read the whole quote, but he goes on to going through this radiation cleansing, and it involves two plastic screens going around his body, and then he explains that the air is sucked out of this chamber around him, creating a vacuum, and a electrical sensation is felt when new, pure air is pushed into the chamber, and he experiences feeling very vitalized by this detox process, which takes literally seconds. So I believe this is what Troy Hurtubise is doing, and I know that I've defined the conditions under which this technology operates, and I'm looking to be able to help the world with one of these machines as well at some point.
Interesting. So you're saying that this could potentially be built and help people. Now, is it does it really involve some kind of radiation then, or is it another? We just use that name for it to understand it, or is it really radiation involved there, Alex?
Well, radiation is a term that means an emanation of energy. Radioactivity is a more specific term. So radiation, like if you know, cell phones are radiating you, the sun is radiating us, everything's being radiated all the time by all kinds of different energies. So that term itself is very vague. I think when they're using that in the discussion earlier, they're talking about a radiation of low frequency sound that causes the electroporation in all the cells of the body, which is the cellular or the skin respiration that's being discussed by the Atlantean in that Bernard conversation. So I think that this electrical effect is why I'm encouraging people to use gold and silver nanoparticle colloids and go barefoot, because that raises the electricity up into your body in exactly the same way as is being done artificially in this underground chamber in the vacuum space that's being created around this guy. So, you know, you can build a machine to do it with high energies in seconds, or you can live a lifestyle to do it with low energies over hours or days. And that's the lifestyle that I'm choosing, and that, you know, the Vedic tradition through Anastasia in Russia is suggesting to people. So I think, you know, those of us who take these natural consciousness tools of communicating with plants and take it to heart and start using it, we're the ones that will feel the benefits of atmospheric radiation abatement. And our children, or even ourselves in the future using this technology, may be able to psychokinetically influence microbes to increase the amount of abatement that's occurring, you know, atmospherically. And I think certainly the pyramids turning on, the atmospheric plasma is forming, will increase the planet's electrical respiration, as it was called in the context of the human body, and that that respiration will be creating a planetary purging of toxins, just, you know, in a transmutation into healthy, non-toxic substances, just in the same way that these technologies can do for HHO plasma on the human body.
Excellent having you back once again, Alex. We thank you very much for the update. Keep up the good work, obviously, in La Mana, and let's do an update again as we get closer, obviously. Let's see how weird it can get. In the meantime, of course, we urge our listeners to keep an eye on your website, humanresonance.org, for all the latest developments. Anything else now, Alex, you want to mention before we wrap things up then for this time?
I think we covered so many topics. My head is spinning, but I really look forward to being able to, you know, engage in a dialogue this open where we can jump around because the connections are so many. So I thank you again for that opportunity and look forward to the next time. Take care, Henrik.
That's our program for today. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Radio. Stay inquisitive, stay open-minded, and stay tuned to Red Ice Radio as we continue to bring you what we consider to be the most fascinating and important topics. My thanks to Fredrik, Lana, and Elizabeth. Take care.